Welcome, one and all, to the podcast dedicated to exploring the vast media landscape in search of its finest creatives. I'm Darren, your host. Welcome to Heroes of the Mediascape. My featured guest today is voiceover maestro, musician, score composer, and martial artist, Geraldo Cortez. How's it going, man?
Really good, man. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
I'm really excited to have you on this podcast.
Me too. Me too.
Right on. So I want to start you off with a heroic opener, as I'm calling it. You and I have both talked in the past about how we are both fathers. What is the best part about being a dad?
Oh, that's a tough one to answer. The best part of being a dad. I guess that, and I hope that I'm not being exaggerated in saying it. I mean, you being your father as well, you'll tell me if I'm spot on or not. But I guess it's kind of like when you hit adult life, you feel that there's something missing. You may be married, you may be financially successful, happy with the work that you're doing. But if you don't have a child, there's this kind of void. And then when a child comes into your life, it's like, okay, this is what I was waiting for. This is it. And you truly understand what unconditional love is, truly for the first time. And that's the best part about it. It's the best and most exhausting thing you will ever do in your life, but ultimately the best.
For sure. I am totally with you on that. I can definitely relate. You know, it is a lot of work. You know, my daughter's still pretty young, but yeah, it's such a blast, you know, just being around her and playing with her. And, you know, it's just, I could do it all day. I could never get sick of it. So
yeah,
she just makes my day better.
How old is she now?
She is a little under two. She's a couple months until she turns two.
That's a special phase.
Yeah, she's running now. So,
that's great.
Yeah, baby on the loose.
Yeah, yeah. It can be a bit terrifying at times, but it's great overall.
Yeah,
when my son started to run, it was a bit of a relief, actually, because most parents will say, oh, when they start walking, that's when you start worrying. Well, in our case over here, it was pretty much the other way around, because ever since he was born, my son, he was always very restless. He just didn't want to sit still. And then I finally understood when he started walking, because he just wanted to move. And he's very energetic. So when he finally learned how to walk, it just made things easier, actually.
Is he just like you?
Very much so. I believe, like, he's the next step, actually.
Yeah,
he's way ahead of me in terms of, he's very well coordinated. I mean, he's going to turn six in May, and I mean, he's just way ahead of where I was at his age in terms of, you know, physical skills and stuff like that. He's very, very intelligent. Sometimes too much for his own good. But I mean, he's great. He's great. He's the best. Really, really proud of my little boy.
Gotta love him, man.
Yeah.
So cool. So speaking of being really coordinated, just like his father, let's talk about you, and let's talk about your martial arts side of yourself. So whenever I open social media, like Instagram or Vero, shout out, I'll occasionally see posts of you typically relating to like your martial arts background. Can you describe like what exactly it is that you specialize in?
Sure. Well, my journey with martial arts started when I was 6 years old. And that was with Taekwondo, the Korean martial art. I practiced that for 10 years. This was way back in the 80s. So this was pre-Olympic sport, Taekwondo. It was very, very traditional and pretty hardcore. And after that, so I trained from 6 to 16, and then I kind of took a break from that because I started getting into music and my parents were divorcing, so my head was in a, you know, pretty confused place. And I thought, you know what, I've been doing this for 10 years, I'll take a break. So I just ceased all martial art activity for 3 years. And then I kind of snapped out of it. I was like, what the hell am I doing? I mean, this was always so good for me in every way. I mean, in terms of health and state of mind and all that. But then I thought, let me try something else. And that's when I came across a kung fu school. It was a style, which is a pretty famous style called Hong Ka. Anyone who's a fan of Hong Kong cinema will know about this style because it's present in all the big Shaw Brother movies. So I trained in that style for, I think, around 9 years. Very long story, but I had pretty much a falling out with the school and the teacher, and I was, I should say, kind of like orphaned. But I very fortunately came upon a Chinese, very well-known master here in Brazil by the name of Danny Hu, who teaches a style called Shen She Quan, which is sacred snake boxing. It's a southern style. It's not one of the most famous styles, but if anyone has ever watched the movie The Snake and Crane Arts of Shaolin, that movie, it's not a very good movie, actually, but it's about the founder of my style, which I have been practicing now for 15 years. And so that's what I specialize in. It is a very traditional southern Chinese style of kung fu. And yeah, absolutely, absolutely love it. Can't get enough of it. And the thing that I really enjoy about martial arts, of course, the physical aspect is great, but what I really enjoy is how much studying you have to do, because I believe that there's this sort of misconception regarding martial arts that it's basically a pairing between learning how to kick ass and Buddhist principles. That's not really it. It's the practice and it's the theory. The theory is the science that is the foundation for the practice. And when people think of it in a philosophical manner, yes, there are philosophical principles that you do learn in Chinese martial arts, but basically the idea is that what you practice in the school has to have servitude for your life. That's when it's meaningful. That's when the power of martial arts in transforming positively one's life really has meaning.
Well, I never really thought of it in that way, but it makes a lot of sense to tie it so directly into like your purpose in life, you know, and like becoming one with it and like who you are. Like that's amazing.
Yeah, I don't feel too comfortably saying that it's a way of life, but it kind of is. I mean, because sometimes when you say it, it sounds quasi-religious, and that's not really necessarily the case. But it's more about understanding that what you learn in terms of when you are, you know, confronted with an opponent, you're dealing with an adversary, how you behave in that situation, and what are the tools available for you. When you can draw that parallel between that and what you do in your everyday life, be it your personal life, your job, the decisions that you have to make every day, that's when it really means something. It's much deeper than learning how to punch and kick and whatever, which is an important aspect of it. But there's this duality in Chinese martial arts that is one in wu. One means speech, Wu means martial. The idea is that you need both. You need to be able to intellectually articulate about what you're doing, and you have to be able to do it. So both things are very important.
Absolutely. And what advice could you give to people who are looking to start, or looking to, let's say, like, they want to learn Chinese Kung Fu or martial arts?
Sure.
What advice could you give to them?
Well, I don't really advocate in terms of what people should choose, but I think the most important thing is to find a discipline that the person relates to, be it Kung Fu, Karate, Jiu-Jitsu, Aikido, you name it. I mean, it really depends on what the person wants to do. Is it about fitness? Is it about health? Is it about spiritual centering? What is it exactly that the person is looking for? But overall, nowadays, I do believe, especially that for young kids, martial arts are very, very, very valuable, especially in this day and age, in terms of teaching youngsters about dealing with hardship and discipline and having patience. And just, how should I put it? Being able to deal with hard things, which I think sometimes can be, with the best of intentions, taken away from kids. And I think that in the long run, that's not a good thing. So martial arts still carries that sort of traditional teaching that I think is lacking in modern society nowadays.
Absolutely. I mean, as someone who works in the education field, I'm totally with you. I see it every day, and to have that in your toolbox, like you're saying, as a way to kind of learn how to overcome hardship, to learn how to get through the tough times, and also just to feel better too, right?
100%. And you being in the education field, I mean, you're at the forefront. I mean, you know this much more than I do.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard because, like, you see what's happening at school, and you know, like, traditionally speaking, like, you think, you know, hey, stop that, you know, or whatever, like, why are you doing that? But then when you really get, you know, and I'm obviously not going to, like, pull the curtain back too much here for confidentiality reasons, but I mean, when you think about, you learn about some of the things that they go through, the things that they've experienced, that they are experiencing, and then your heart just breaks for them, you know, just because it's something that, and there was a really smart and amazing teacher that I used to work with, and they said that, you know, like, for them, they would struggle with some of those things as an adult, and these are kids, you know, elementary, middle school, high school, whatever age range you're looking at, it doesn't matter. It's true across the board. So, like you're saying, to have that in your toolbox, have that be something that helps you grow as a person, that helps you mentally, physically, spiritually, in every aspect. I mean, and also on top of it too, like, socially, right? I'm sure there's actually, like, you're a part of a group of people going through a similar thing, almost like a sports team in a way, where, you know, you're a part of this group of people, this, like, shared connection that you build these bonds, which I think just strengthens all of that, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's 100% correct.
Yeah. Sorry. Rant over.
No. Beautiful. That's it. Yeah. That's what it's about.
Absolutely. Well, hey, you know, when I see you on social media, when I see the clips of you on there, I sometimes have to, like do a double take. Like, am I seeing Rich Citrone out there? Like, what's,
oh, you know? Man, Richard is well, that guy is a living demigod, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's so great. And I've traded some messages with him now and then. I did get to meet him very briefly in 2019 when I went to Pasadena for Zach's first director cut event, and he was there at the last day. So very quickly, but I did, you know, kind of say, oh yeah, I'm a martial artist too. And he's like, oh wow, what style? And so, yeah, he's great. He's amazing. I really look up to the guy. He's great.
Have you ever thought about like joining like the stunt team for like a movie or a TV show?
Well, this is actually a fun story. I met my current Sifu on a film set. So this is the crazy part. Because at the time, I was still studying at the other school, when I was studying Hongka. And I got approached by a company that represented film extras for TV and film. And there was a soap opera being filmed here in Brazil. And kind of like the underlying theme of the soap opera was Kung Fu and Chinese Mafia. And so they were looking for Kung Fu practitioners just to, you know, fill in the background. There was a Kung Fu school and there were going to be some, you know, some fight spots and this and that. And so I got approached by this company and actually it was, I wouldn't say that nowadays it would be something that I would like to do, but at the time it was kind of like, ooh, I've always thought about doing this. This could be fun. And so I got into this show as a kind of like an upgraded extra. I wasn't just standing in the background. I was actually moving in the background. So doing some moves and some acrobatics and some forms and stuff like that. And the choreographer and the stunt coordinator of the show was this man, Danny Hu. And very, very friendly and very communicative. And at the time, because my teacher's teacher was a friend of his. They kind of came into Brazil at the same time from China and from different styles, but they knew each other very well. And so that kind of struck the conversation up and we really got along marvelously. And at one point, he kind of saw that my abilities were above average. So he started including me in more scenes that had to do with actual stunt work, you know, with doing fights and certain acrobatics, up to the point where I became the stunt double of one of the leads in the show. And so the crazy thing is I have done stunt work. This was the only time, but I have done stunt work. And that's where I met my current master.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, he's got a huge background. I mean, he's worked. He graduated from the, I think it's the Chinese Dramatic School of Arts in Hong Kong. He's originally from Macau, but he studied in Hong Kong as well. And he's worked with heaps of people. He's worked with Jackie Chan back in the day, and he's still a stunt wrangler and coordinator and action designer till today.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
that's a really cool story. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a fun fact.
Yeah. So on that similar topic, you also do voiceover work, yes?
Yes, that's right. I do.
So what inspired you to become a voiceover artist? Were there any specific voice artists that you looked up to, wanted to emulate? Or is it something that you were just natural at and just wanted to pursue on your own? Like what led you to going down that route?
This is also a bit of a fun story because when I was very young, my main thing was I wanted to be an actor. That was it. I just wanted to act. I loved playing pretend. I loved, you know, putting on costumes and pretending I was certain characters and stuff like that. But when I got into my pre-teen years and started getting involved with music, I kind of shelved that. Later on, I started working with music production focused on advertising. So this was Yeah, it's going to be 20 years now. So this was 2006, and I got work at a production studio, which focused on that. So it was scores for TV commercials, radio spots, anything to do with music and audio in the advertising world. Now, during that time, practically no one had home studios and equipment, and voiceover artists had to go into the studio to do narrations, voice acting, you name it. And one day, we were producing, I think it was a car commercial or something like that. It was a radio spot. And the designated voiceover artist got sick and he couldn't come in. But the deadline was at the end of that day. So everyone at the studio kind of panicked and said, what are we going to do? I mean, the guy just called in sick. He's lost his voice and he can't come in. So I just raised my hand and I said, can I try? And everyone looked at me and said, yeah, what have we got to lose? So I recorded the script and everyone was kind of, oh, wow, you're good at this. And I said, well, I guess I am. So it kind of happened happened by accident, in the sense that I wasn't really pursuing it. But then I just began doing more and more work, and it kind of rekindled my acting flame, if you will. And more I started doing more stuff in advertising. And another thing that helped a lot was the fact that I have fluent English. So I started doing a lot of stuff outside of Brazil. And in recent years, I started to really branch out into the North American market, the European market, and started doing a lot of audiobooks as well, and some dubbing work here and there. I have dubbed one video game character to date, which is cool.
What is that, if you don't mind me asking?
It's a game called Tainted Grail. It's kind of, they call it like the, if you're into video games, it's kind of like the indie version of Skyrim, you know, the Elder Scrolls. And yeah, and so I landed a character in that game, and it's a pretty cool character. What do you call it? He's a druid, but he's kind of like a corrupted, destroyed druid. So he has a very raspy kind of demonic voice. So it's cool. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, hopefully more to come in that realm soon.
Yeah. Well, since you brought up audiobooks too, like, what is the big difference that you've noticed in doing both, between voiceover work, and like for commercials or for advertising, and narrating audiobooks? Like what is the big difference between the two of them, in your opinion?
Well, the most obvious difference is length, because audiobooks will have from 3 to 9 to 12 hours of edited audio. So it's a lot of work. But at the same time, the thing is that, because with advertising, we're talking about, you know, 30 seconds, at the most 60 seconds. Or if I'm doing, you know, corporate scripts, sometimes it goes up to 2 minutes or something like that. But it's normally short content. Whereas with audiobooks, I particularly find it very, very interesting, especially if I'm doing different characters, because I really get to play with different voices, different tones of voice, different accents, and which sometimes can be a challenge, of course, but it's a challenge that I welcome every time. So yeah, that's the difference. I absolutely love doing audiobooks. It's great. I mean, I love stories. I love books. I love any form of narration is something that attracts me. For example, we were talking about fatherhood. I love telling stories to my kid. I love it. Absolutely love it. You know, it's bedtime. I lay back down with him. and ask him, what do you want me to read today? And he'll pick it out and I'll do it. I mean, I'm reading Harry Potter for him right now and having a blast.
I bet.
Yeah.
Do you do all the characters too, like the different voices for every single one?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Which one's your favorite?
Well, up to now, we're still doing book one. So I will say that I have a lot of fun doing Hagrid.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Trying to put on, you know, that kind of deep and insecure voice. It's fun.
Do you have a preference then for audiobook or like advertising?
Personal preference? Yes. I do prefer doing audiobook work. But there is also the financial reality where advertising pays a lot more. The thing with doing voice work is that you, especially nowadays, you have to be very versatile. So anything that comes my way that requires voice work, I'm in. So be it advertising, be it dubbing, audiobooks, sometimes that you get stuff like doing narrations for events, you know, that's just going to, you know, play it back on the sound system at the day. Yeah, so I like all of it. That's the truth. I mean, if I had to pick one, yeah, I mean, voice acting I do prefer for sure. But I love all voice work, whatever it is.
Right on. You put up an interesting point too about how advertising pays more, but the amount of work you do for that recording is so much less.
Oh yeah.
I find that fascinating, you know?
Yeah. 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 But I mean, it is what it is. It's one of those things that's the reality of it. There's way more money in advertising than in the audiobook market, but it's a big industry right now, audiobook production, especially when it's high level. So, yeah, and it also depends on a lot of things. I mean, if you're already kind of like a famous voice, that will change in how much you charge per hour for sure. So, right. I mean, if you're someone like who you obviously know, Ray Porter, who is like, you know, way up there in the audiobook world and a tremendous actor and a great, great voice. And the cool thing is that it's a profession that's getting more and more recognized. Just the other day, I did post about this on my voiceover account, on Instagram. It was, Joe Rogan had, Bradley Cooper on his show, and he spontaneously said that voice actors and voice artists doing audiobooks and having to change their voice and do different characters was a very underrated art form. And they brought up Andy Serkis narrating The Lord of the Rings, which I just found that so great. I mean, I remember just watching the episode on a random weekend, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, that's what I do. This is so cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you mentioned Ray Porter. I mean, that's, you know, the king.
You know? Absolutely.
Yeah. The man himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would you say is your favorite project you've been a part of?
Wow. That's a tough one. In terms of voice work?
Yeah. And it could be anything.
That's a difficult one. It's really tough to choose from so much work. But I will say, I'm not sure if it's my favorite, but it was definitely probably one of the most challenging I've done. And luckily, it's pretty recent, so I can remember it. There's this book that I narrated, called Magic Bridge. If you throw it down on Audible, you'll find it. And it was a huge challenge because in this specific story, I had to do the main character, which was an American. So standard North American accent. I had to do this other kind of mysterious guy, which had more of a Southern accent. I mean, the directions were to imitate Samuel Jackson. So it's a different voice and a different accent. And the main character travels to India and Sri Lanka. So I had to do those accents as well in English. And the funny thing is about when I got this job was that the guy, the author, he sent me the script and I did just one short audition. And he said, look, I love your narrating, but there's an issue with accents. Can you do these accents? Can I send you another script so you can audition for these as well? And I said, yep, absolutely. Let me do it. And I did those. And then the kind of third and final phase of the audition was, he said, well, there is one more challenge. And I said, okay, fine. What is it? He said, the main character has an Australian friend. And I said, well, aren't you in luck?
Right.
And when I told him that I was an Aussie, he said, oh, you're kidding. I said, no, it's true.
There you go.
Yeah. And it's a fun story. It has a lot to do with religion and mythology and yeah, it's quite interesting. It's a good book. It's a good book. So I really enjoyed that one. It actually has a pretty epic scale, and because it has to do a lot with, you know, dealing with God and the devil and different religious figures in, you know, in India and in the States and all that, and it's really cool. It's really cool. So yeah, if I had to pick one, it would be that one.
That's awesome. Very cool. And I also couldn't help but notice that you were the Voicy Awards 2025 winner of the audiobook category on voices.com.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that was a cool one. And it was a surprise as well. I mean, I didn't even know that I was in the running. So
really?
It's cool. Yeah, I mean, they pretty much pulled up the stats of the roster of artists that they have there, and I seem to have excelled in that field, so that was good.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I do have a question about audiobooks when you're recording an audiobook.
Sure.
So when you were going through like page by page, paragraph by paragraph, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you do like the Seth MacFarlane version where you're going back and forth between different characters, like rapid fire, like in real time? Or do you literally go like sentence by sentence, line by line, and just kind of like go through it methodically?
Normally, it really depends on the project, but normally what I try to do is that I try to record as close as possible as to what the listener will be hearing in terms of rhythm. So, I mean, if I have to change from one character to the next, I try to just flow into it. If I mess up, I'll do that take again, no problem. Or that sentence or that segment. But I do try to, like I was, you know, bringing up the example of Andy Serkis doing Lord of the Rings. I mean, he's going from the narrator into Sméagol right after. I'm not comparing myself to him, but whenever I have to change from, you know, the narrator to a certain character, I try to do it naturally and seamlessly without having to stop and, you know, go and, you know, thankfully I do manage to do that. So, yeah, I try to record as naturally as possible, as if I had the book in my hand and were telling the story to someone in front of me.
I would say that's probably the best way to do it, right?
Well, you know, it's the way that worked best for me because there's always a lot of material that you have to go through. So there's not that much time anyway, but even if there were a lot of time, I prefer to do full takes of full chapters. And worst case scenario, it hits the author and they say, "Look, I'd like a reread of this part and this part." And I have gotten, it's pretty rare, but I have gotten revisions where it's like, "I'm really not feeling this chapter. Would you mind doing it again?" I'm like, "Nah, absolutely. Sure." And whenever that comes in, they're mostly right. So yeah, it's always good to have some sort of direction, because sometimes you'll just get a book and they tell you, yeah, read away, and you're looking for, you know, directions about, okay, what does this character sound like? What am I supposed to emulate here? Sometimes the book will kind of, it directs you on its own, if that makes any sense, but not all work does. So, yeah.
Right on. So do you have any dream projects that you'd love to be a part of, or any particular like voice actor that you would love to work with someday?
Well, a voice actor I'd love to work with. I mean, we just talked about him, Ray Porter. If I could ever do anything with him, that would be an absolute dream come true. I'm a huge admirer of his. In terms of a dream project, I actually do have a dream project, and it's never been done before. At least, I mean, it has been done before, but I think it hasn't been done before officially in English, which is The NeverEnding Story. That's one that I've had my eye on, that one, and nobody's ever, I haven't seen anyone at least get the rights to that book and do an English version, because the original is German. That's a special one. That's one that I would, that would be an absolute delight.
Yeah, and it's a throwback title. It's a very popular movie that I think is that still resonates with, still very popular nowadays.
Yes, so, absolutely.
Yeah, that'd be a great project. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe I'll have to chase after that one by myself. We'll see.
Yeah. Now you never know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, since we're on the topic of audio, you are also an amazing musician.
Thank you.
So, yeah. So how long have you been doing this? Like, how long have you been playing guitar? How long have you been making music? And what type of music or what instrument, and like, what's your preference?
Sure. Well, I started playing music when I was around 10, but very, how should I put it? Didn't have any higher aspirations from it. It was kind of like an extracurricular activity, you know, out of school. So it was like the piano lesson. And it was on the same level of, you know, going to soccer practice or doing gymnastics or whatever. But I've always enjoyed the interesting thing about my journey with music was that the type of music that has always resonated with me and that has always moved me very deeply is film music. That has From since I was born, that's the kind of music that really caught my attention. Interestingly enough, I only got into what you would call popular music very later on in life, like in my mid to late teens. So I started off, as I said, at 10 playing the piano, but it was very, like I said, it was just part of what my life was at that point. My mom wanted me to start studying an instrument, so I did that. But then this was when I still lived back in Australia. When we moved to Brazil, so I kind of abandoned that. But at age 15 is when I really fell in love with playing the guitar. So had a couple of buddies who were learning how to play the acoustic guitar and, you know, try and play tunes by ear. And then, so that's when music really became important to me. And that's when I start those, that's kind of my gateway entrance was playing the guitar. And so from that, I went into playing the electric guitar and then starting to write my own music and had a couple of my own bands. So when I was in my 20s, that's when I kind of, my aspiration at the time was to be kind of a singer-songwriter, having my own band accompany me and writing my own music and trying to make a living out of that. And then when I started working with music production for advertising and doing a lot of scoring within the advertising world, that's when I kind of, when my love for film music kind of came full circle, because that was practically what I was doing. I mean, I wasn't, at that point, I still wasn't scoring full-length features or anything, but it was the same kind of work. I'm putting music to video. And so the great thing about producing music, especially for advertising, because you have to be able to come up with what the client wants. So you have to be pretty well versed in a variety of genres. I mean, in terms of the music that I like to play live, yeah, I'm a rock and roll guy. But in terms of the music that I like to write nowadays, I just love doing orchestral mock-ups and stuff like that. So film music for me is the yeah, that's my huge passion. All kinds of film music, not only, you know, the classical symphonic paradigm of old, well, not old, but I mean older cinema, but modern stuff as well. Absolutely love it.
Very cool. Yeah, and that's actually how I first discovered your music, was through your soundtracks. I think it was on SoundCloud, I want to say.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, and you have so many, and there's so many good ones too.
Thank you.
A lot of them were like fan-made, right? Like they were, yeah. Maybe not fan-made, it's not the right term, but like...
No, it's fan-made. It's absolutely fan-made.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when we delve into, you know, all things Zack Snyder in DC Universe, that's pretty much the way that I got a small bit of notoriety within the fandom, was because of that sort of thing. But that was never my intent. The truth is that, we can go into that later if you want. But basically, with those tracks, it was very much a cathartic process of coming out of the 2017 Justice League movie and just absolutely frustrated out of my mind, and thought, what can I do to just kind of purge this terrible feeling inside of me? And the first thing that I did was, I need to make music in terms of what would be the right music for the actual movie and not this abomination that I just saw in the movie theater. And that's where that started.
And I have to be honest, you know, Danny Elfman is a great film composer. Yeah. I say this with all due respect, but your stuff's way better, man.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I mean, you don't even have to go to me. I mean, look at what Junkie XL did. That was, I mean, as soon as we saw the actual movie and we heard the actual movie, it was like, oh, it was a sigh of relief.
Big time. Huge sigh of relief. One that was years in the making.
Years in the making. Years in the making. How long was it? It was 4 years until it ultimately came to fruition, right?
That's true. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
It's crazy. While we're on the topic of Zack Snyder.
Yes.
You know, in crazy times. What was actually your introduction to Zack Snyder? When did you first become a fan of his?
Okay. So interestingly enough, I pretty much watched every Zack Snyder movie up until, I'm trying to remember if I saw Sucker Punch before or after. No, I did see it before. I did see Dawn of the Dead, enjoyed it immensely, but it wasn't something that kind of like, ooh, now I'm a Zack Snyder fan. I wouldn't be honest if I said that. So there was Dawn of the Dead, and then 300. And 300, I mean, pretty much blew everyone's mind. And it was cool because I had just reread the comic something like 10 months before the movie came out. So it was really fresh in my mind. And the fun aspect of him having cast Rodrigo Santoro as Xerxes, who's a Brazilian actor. Pretty much everyone around Brazil was curious to see that as well. But that movie was like, oh, okay, this guy has a very distinct style to his filmmaking. Let's see what happens next. And then Watchmen came out. And Watchmen really caught my eye because, one, I was a huge fan of the original comic, but I dare say that I think the movie is better than the original graphic novel. Many purists will probably want to kill me after that one, but it's the way I feel. that's the one that really blew my mind. And that's when I became interested in his work. I was like, okay, this is a guy that has his own directorial style. What people call an auteur, I think. And
rightly so.
Yes, and rightly so. When an artist really is original about what he's doing, that's the best of worlds. I mean, whether you like it or not, it's something that you have to appreciate. And so I was already a fan of his then, but I still wasn't a diehard fan in the sense that I could appreciate it, but I wouldn't lose sleep over it. And then Sucker Punch came. Thought it was great. And it really, I mean, what should I say? I mean, in terms of his directorial style, it was something that I expected in terms of the color palette, style, everything about it screamed Zack Snyder. And then I heard that Chris Nolan had hired him to do Man of Steel. Now, this one for me was very intriguing because having seen everything that Zack had done until then, I was like, this is an odd choice. I wasn't expecting that one. And this was a choice that meant a lot to me because Superman is my absolute favorite fictional character of all time. I mean, there are two men that I love in my life, my dad and Superman. I'm not counting my son because he's still a boy. I've loved Superman since before I could talk. I mean, everything surrounding the character in terms of the mythology, the lore, everything just, it's kind of part of who I am and who I grew up to be. It's kind of hard to explain, really. But, you know, diehard Superman fans will understand that. So when Zack got chosen to direct Man of Steel, and actually it wasn't only the choice itself that intrigued me. It was something that he said, or at least was written in a magazine from an interview, where he said, "This is probably the most realistic film that I've ever made." And I was like, oh, now this is interesting. I mean, coming from the guy who's done stylized films in the sense that they were not meant to be realistic at all, any of them. I mean, 300, Watchmen, Sucker Punch, Dawn of the Dead, sure, but that's a different animal all the same. But the idea of a realistic Superman film, I was like, oh, this is, I'm interested in this one. And when it came out, I just fell in love with it head over heels. I mean, the whole take, it was the Superman story that I had wanted all my life and then some. Everything. I mean, and the way that he took the law, he didn't disrespect anything about it. On the contrary, I think to me that many people will disagree, but to me, he honored the legacy of Superman more than pretty much anyone else who's worked on the material. While still, yes, you could say that he deconstructed certain things, but he never messed with the essence of anything in terms of character, in terms of story. It's all there. And to me, that's why it's kind of hard for me to distinguish between Man of Steel, BVS, and Justice League, because it's a Superman-centric narrative, and it's the evolution of that. And so if I were to say when I really became a diehard fan was with Man of Steel, for sure. Absolutely.
That's amazing. What was your experience like watching it for the first time in the movie theater?
How to put that in words? I mean, wow. Well, blew my mind is an understatement. It was just so emotional. I mean, I was just so many scenes where I was just bawling my eyes out, but not because of you know, necessarily emotional, sad scenes, but the fact that I was just so happy that my favorite character and my favorite superhero was getting the treatment he deserved. And the really cool thing, I remember this to this day, that I was watching the movie, and at one point the movie was so interesting, the story was so interesting, that I forgot for a moment that it was a Superman movie. I was like, wow, this is a really cool sci-fi movie. This is amazing. I mean, this is so gripping. And then all of a sudden Superman shows up. I was like, oh, and it's a Superman movie on top of that. What else could I have asked for? Nothing. And yeah, I mean, just it was kind of like a planetary alignment. I mean, the cast, Zach, everything. It's great. I can't get enough of it. I mean, and the thing that really shows that it stands the test of time, I mean, you take someone like my wife, she's not a diehard fan at all by any measure, but if that movie is ever on and she sits and starts watching it, she will say, wow, I sometimes forget how good this movie is. And I mean, she has no skin in the game, if you'll say, but yeah, so it's really good.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's one of my absolute favorite movies as well. Probably the one that's had maybe the biggest impact on my life in terms of me just kind of like re-engrossing myself in that world of superhero fandom, Zack Snyder fandom. Just his take on the character just totally blew my mind.
Sure.
The way he kind of re-evolutionized certain aspects of the mythology in the movie, but still, like you said, was honoring the source material. And, you know, like the way that he went about it, I loved his take on it. I loved all the supporting cast and their characters. And Henry Cavill is an amazing Superman. Admittedly, I am a huge Christopher Reeve fan of him as Superman, of him as an actor, of him as a person. You name it, I'm a huge fan of Christopher Reeve.
Same.
But that also doesn't mean that I can't still be a huge fan of Henry Cavill's Superman. And I think that kind of gets people kind of lose sight of that, you know, when it comes
sure.
to that topic. But
sure. No, I mean, just to add on to that, I totally agree, because I feel the same. Because it's actually... Because if you really think about it, okay, you're talking about two different actors in two different periods of time playing the same character. But is it really the same character? Because the interpretation is very different. And I mean, at least for myself, Christopher Reeve, for me, as Superman, was kind of like, he was a bit of a fatherly figure, if that makes any sense. I mean, I was a kid, he was way older than I was, whereas Henry is younger than I am. So the thing with Henry is that he's more relatable, and the interpretation of him as Superman is more relatable. And the amount of qualities that he managed to garner with his interpretation of Superman, to me, is just, it's genius.
Genius is the correct word. Yes.
Yeah.
So as you're well aware, this month we are celebrating the 10-year anniversary of Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, and the 5-year anniversary of the release of Zack Snyder's Justice League, aka the Snyder Cut.
Yeah.
And it's also going to, I think next month is going to mark the 10-year anniversary of when they started shooting Justice League, what we now know as Zack Snyder's Justice League. It's just, wow. I can't believe it's been this long.
Same. Wow. Yeah. 10 years of BVS. That's another one that I distinctly remember watching in the movie theater and just coming out pretty much as emotional as I was with Man of Steel. And the crazy thing is, because of course, as we all know, BVS was surrounded by controversy and all of those sketchy reviews that came out all of a sudden and all of that stuff that was printed and then was misprinted and you name it. And funnily enough, I went into the movie. I mean, of course, I saw the theatrical cut and then I saw the ultimate cut and I was like, oh, Jesus, this is what we were supposed to see. But I didn't come out of the theatrical version like, I couldn't understand why people could say that that was a bad movie. I really couldn't. It really dumbfounded me. There was no moment whatsoever where I thought, oh, okay, yeah, I can understand why people didn't like it. I couldn't understand. And the thing is, it's a real shame that they forced that 2.5-hour version into the theaters instead of just going with the full three-hour length film. Because it really loses so much nuance and detail. To me, BVS is probably, in my opinion, the best comic book movie ever made. That one, specifically. The way that it, I mean, from beginning to end, it's just so clean. I mean, it hits every beat, every plot twist, everything is just so well placed. It's a work of art. That movie's amazing.
It truly is. Yeah, I would love to sit down with Chris Terrio and just talk to him about the script. Just how, yes. I mean, just every time I watch the movie, it's like there's everything ties together. You know, in some way or another, it's such a beautifully crafted story, and just like artistically speaking, it is a masterclass in filmmaking and screenwriting. And I'm sure people are laughing at the fact of me even saying that, but I don't care because that's just how I feel. Based on everything that's in the movie, it's so deep, it's so complex. But not in a way that is like self-indulgent. It's not in a way that takes away from anything. I mean, yeah, I wish, you know, Henry Cavill's Superman, yeah, he was he had a very difficult time in that movie. I think it's fair to say, you know, very challenged from everywhere, which is done purposefully, obviously.
Yes.
But yeah, I think everything happens for a reason, and you know, you think of everything that happens in that story and how it ties back to certain moments from earlier in the story and even the previous movie and how it plants seeds at the same time for the next movie and the one after that, while also not taking away from the one that's currently happening, right? I mean, that in itself is an accomplishment.
Absolutely.
You know? So it's so well done, masterfully done, and it's absolutely shocking to see, just to see people's negative response to it, and not even just like a negative response, like, oh, I didn't like it. It was like a very extreme, hardcore, a very hard no, you know, very, very emotional no for many people, which I was very surprised when I first saw that response to the movie. And obviously to some people that's maybe not changed, but I think over time it kind of has sort of lessened a little bit in how extreme people's views are with that movie in terms of the negativity of it.
Well, sure. I mean, I couldn't agree. I couldn't have said it better myself. That's really it. I mean, if I were to comment on anything adding to that, I may be repeating what you just said, but the thing that like you said, it's not just the negative response. It's not just, yeah, I didn't like it. There was this kind of, dare I say, not very genuine hatred for the movie. That's what I felt. It didn't feel natural. It didn't feel, I mean, people kind of poking fun at the movie, I just couldn't understand it. And especially after, you know, having seen the movie time and time again, I mean, every sequence is just like, it's like a painting in motion. And the story is just, you see that everyone who worked on that movie really put their heart into it. Everyone, every single department did their absolute best work. And for people to kind of dismiss the movie as they did, I don't know. Without going too far down a conspiracy theory rabbit hole, but it just seemed like a lot of it was kind of like paid off, really. I mean, in terms of the reviews, and I mean, they were treating it as if it were some sort of B movie. I remember seeing one specific review and I said, how can the guy who made Man of Steel, which I absolutely love, how can he have made such a flop? And I went into the movie and then I just got even more confused. I said, we didn't see the same movie. I mean, this person who wrote this review didn't see the same movie that I did. It's just not possible.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And the fact that it stands the test of time, that nowadays so many people are kind of warming up to it that didn't at the time, it just shows how good of a movie it really is. If you think about it, I mean, great pieces of art weren't necessarily popular when they came out. I'm not sure if this is true. I mean, you can fact check me for this later, but I think that when Rhapsody in Blue was first played, that people just walked out of the theater, of the concert hall or whatever.
Very possible, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, imagine that. How? But yeah, it happened.
Exactly, and there's been a lot of instances of that over the years. Citizen Kane, another
iconic
movie. Yeah, was not well liked at first, and then years later, it became a classic. You know,
a classic.
And I know I'm towing a very, very fine line here, but I see comparisons to that with BVS compared to Citizen Kane. I see it, you know?
Yeah, I see it too. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the same level of detail and mastery and the same level of care in the filmmaking. Yeah, it's there. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and when I think of those negative, the things that people don't like about the movie, you know, just thinking about them out loud, you know, like the whole like Batman doesn't kill aspect, the Martha moment's a big one, Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor, I'm just, you know, what happens to Superman at the end of the movie, like there's a lot of things that I think people, but it was like you said, it's very bizarre how emotional they were about some of those decisions. And I think part of it's because maybe they weren't, kind of like Watchmen in a way, maybe they just weren't ready for that at that specific moment in time. And, you know, like Christopher Nolan said, you know, I think it was the art book for Man of Steel. He said Watchmen was ahead of its time. It was ahead of the curve. I think it's resonating a lot more, especially as we're seeing the landscape change with more of these superhero movies and just our culture and what's happening in our society in general. I think also has a role to play in that too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, Watchmen was definitely ahead of its time. Definitely ahead of its time. And as were the other ones as well. I mean, Man of Steel, BVS. And even from a technical standpoint, you look at the special effects and the visual effects in these movies. There are movies that come out nowadays that don't hold a candle to it.
No.
Wow.
Incredible.
Incredible. Yeah, incredible.
And I also want to give a shout out to like the other cast and crew members for that movie. Like I think of Larry Fong, Clay Enos, Patrick Tatopoulos, who did the set, obviously Chris Terrio, and just everybody who was involved with that movie. Huge shout out. It's one of the few movies that I actually watched the credits for. I'm just fascinated. I don't know why. It's one of those few movies that I'll watch the credits and be like, oh, I know that person. I've seen that person. Like I follow them online. And
sure.
It's just, it's weird. I know. But
yeah, I mean, especially, I mean, from, you know, being deep into the fandom and at least in my case, you know, having had the privilege to be with Zach personally on a number of occasions, it's really special to kind of get that connection with him and so many other people. So yeah.
And by the way, what was that experience like getting to meet Zach in person and even hang out at his house, right?
Yeah. Well, hanging out at his house was a huge surprise and one that I really wasn't expecting. So getting to meet him basically happened in 2019 with his first director's cut event. I was already very friendly with a bunch of people on Vero, but I was part of a specific group called TPZ, which is a group of 10 fans who were very close to each other, and some of those guys had already a personal connection with Zach through Vero. And there was this coffee meeting that was arranged with Zach, just for this crew. He I'm not sure if this was his, but someone at some point, because of the stone quarry, someone called us the Quarry Boys. So he kind of knew us, with that nickname. But anyway, it was what we expected from meeting him at that on that day was basically, you know, just being with him for 20 minutes or half an hour and saying hi, taking a picture and signing stuff or whatever. He stayed with us chatting for something like over 2 hours. Wow. And it was surreal because I do like to say that, I mean, they say that you shouldn't meet your heroes. Well, they didn't meet Zack Snyder because he's great. He's a bloke. He's very, 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 very authentic, and he's very generous. And I mean, he's generous to an extent where it's kind of unfathomable to me, but he's a very, very good and kind person. And I think that's something that resonates throughout his work, and it's no wonder that people who work with him just absolutely love him, because he is that guy. He's a very positive person. He's got a great energy about him. I mean, as he's famously known, he's a big family man, and I think he treats his crew and his staff and everything in exactly the same way. And yeah, he's just something else. And I what I find fascinating about him is that he's kind of like a Renaissance man in some ways, because he's so well versed in a bunch of things. I mean, he's a very prolific writer, filmmaker. The guy's jacked. I mean, he works out like a pro athlete, and loves physical fitness, and, you know, is so well versed in a bunch of different works of literature and music. I think I asked him once. I don't remember if he answered me. I was like, "When do you sleep? with what time do you sleep?" And so, I mean, that was the first time we met up. The second time was during November of that year when I because what I actually did was kind of like a double purpose trip. I needed to travel to the US to buy clothes for my yet to be born son, because at least at the time it was way cheaper to buy baby clothes in the States. And at the same time, there was going to be the AFSP walk in Pasadena. And a bunch of us from the group of TPZ, we arranged to come out again. And so we had another meeting with Zach for coffee. And this was actually a great meeting in itself, because everyone was very anxious about the whole Snyder Cut thing, because there was a lot of buzz going around and a lot of ups and downs with the whole expectation of if anything was going to happen. And I remember, as if it were yesterday, my dear, dear good friend and brother, Darren Benson, he was sitting next to me and he just asked Zach point blank, "So is the cut going to happen or not?" He just asked it like that. This is November 2019. And I remember that when he asked, I just kind of held my breath. And I was kind of like bracing for the worst. I thought that Zach would say, "You know what? I really appreciate everything that you guys have done, but nah." That's what I was expecting. And then Zach came around and he just looked to his side and looked at us and he said, "At this point, I think it's inevitable." I was like, "Excuse me?" And then he, you know, went into some more details of why he thought it was inevitable at that time, which is a whole other story. But which a couple of weeks later culminated in the whole tweeting of the hashtags and all that, and everyone coming out in support, and that finally going into him heading in to have the talk with the studio. So that was the second time I was with Zach. The third time was again in Pasadena in 2023, which was for his second event, which was for all the DC Universe movies and the screening of Justice League in the Universal City Walk IMAX.
Oh, the Full Circle event.
Yes, the Full Circle event, exactly. So that was the third time I was with him. And then he had already dropped me a hint, because he was doing Rebel Moon at the time. And he said, "I think I might be coming to Brazil later on in the year." And I said, "Sweet, I'd love to see you if you're around." And coincidentally, I was in, because I live in Rio de Janeiro, and he was coming down for this Netflix event in São Paulo, which is fairly close by. And coincidentally, I was in São Paulo with my Sifu, with my Kung Fu Sifu I was training over the weekend. And he was there as well. So I texted him, and at one point he said, "Come over to the hotel and let's have some coffee." And that's what he did. It was me, him, and Deborah. And so that was really, really nice. And he showed me the trailer for Rebel Moon at the time on his phone, which was a fun experience, because he just pulled his phone and he said, "Hey, take a look at the trailer." And then Deborah promptly kind of looked around to see if anyone was, you know, taking notice of what was going on. And then she looked at Zach and said, "Nah, you're good." I said, "Okay, fine." So I put on his headphones that were his Bluetooth headphones and saw the trailer. It was great. And and then after that was the time when we ended up going to Zach's place, which was not in, I mean, I had no expectation of that at all. I had sent him a message. I said that I was traveling with my wife and my son to California, just for a holiday, and that if he would like to meet up, I'd love to see him, love to introduce him to my family. So in my mind, it was like, look, whenever you have, you know, a time slot in your schedule, just name the place and I'll be there. So he sent me this address. I had no idea what it was. I thought it was a, you know, a coffee shop or something, or a restaurant. I'm not sure. And then as we were arriving, I'm like, oh my God, I think this is his house. And there we were. I mean, the entrance to the stone quarry, and then he showed us to his place. And it was, that was a special day. And you, sir, are a part of that conversation, because when he took us into the living room, I was looking at all his books on the shelf, and I noticed your book, The Snyderverse Saga. And I said, oh, that's Darren's book. I was just talking to Darren. And I think your daughter had just been born, if memory serves.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I mentioned that to him and said, yeah, he's recently become a father. And Zach said, oh, that's great. And he was just had so many compliments for the book and said that there's so much covered in that book that he himself did not remember on his own. But anytime he would reference the book, it's like, oh, yeah, this actually happened. That's right. And it was crazy again because, I mean, crazy good, because Zach, just so generous. He sent me the address and then he asked me, who's with you? And I said, my wife and my four-year-old son, at the time 4 years old. And he said, okay, sure. And I mean, he took the time to put on this spread for us, this kind of like breakfast. And as soon as he saw my son, truth is, Zach is just a huge kid. And we had just come from Disneyland, and I had bought this little lightsaber for my son. And then Zach says, oh, I've got one too. And he pulls out this huge lightsaber and starts having a lightsaber duel in the living room with my boy. And then just went into this room and pulled out a bunch of toys for him and just started showing me around the quarry and everything. And then had the pleasure of seeing Deborah again and Wesley. And then he took us down to his he has a movie theater inside the stone quarry, which many people have seen, because that's where he did the commentary for Man of Steel and BVS back in 2020. So it was pretty cool to see the actual place. And he screened a little bit of Star Wars for us, which was fun. Because the two of us were just geeking around, you know, making comments about Star Wars, and it was great. It was amazing. It was a real, real, real treat. The guy, he's the best.
He's the best. Did you get to see the Codex when you were there?
I didn't see the Codex, at least. The truth is, I might have seen it and I didn't register it, because there's so much to see. So much to see. I mean, just going down a hallway and looking to my right, and there's this huge blown up image of Ben Affleck as Batman. I was like, oh my God. And it's that sort of thing happening on and off. And you look down in the corner and there's a huge blown up image of Jared Leto with the Jesus crown as the Joker, and I'm like, Jesus, this is insane.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's crazy.
Crazy. I remember specifically about that time. Maybe not that specific time, but when a group of y'all went over there to his place, because I think it was on the Film Junkie, Dave, his YouTube channel. He does these every Friday. He has like the live show.
Right.
And I think he had Ohio Dave on there.
Sure. That's
and right. He was talking about his experience being there, and he said he got to see he saw it by accident, really, but he said he went to the bathroom, which is like must be not far from the movie theater in his house, and he said it was just sitting there in the bathroom, and he's like,
wow,
is this real? Like it's here.
Wow.
But that was a pretty cool moment.
I did hear anyway. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, shout out to Dave, another wonderful friend. I did use a bathroom there, but that it probably wasn't the same one. I would have noticed the codex in the bathroom.
Yeah, it'd have been hard to miss, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's amazing though, and that's so true. Zach he sounds like an amazing person. I'd love to meet him one day.
I'd love for you to meet him as well, and I'm sure that he'd be thrilled as well to see you in person. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Maybe I could write another Snyderverse book or something.
Oh. Interesting. What have you got up your sleeve?
To be announced.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you a little bit about it afterwards, but
Nice. Looking forward to that.
There may or may not be something in the works, so.
Awesome. Exciting.
Right on. Yep. So you mentioned TPZ, you mentioned some of the like Darren Benson, Dexter Washington,
sure. Yes.
Dave. How active were you in the hashtag Release the Standard Cut campaign? For those who aren't really super familiar, I'm sure most people who are watching or listening to this are, but Zack Snyder, director of Justice League, stepped down because of a family tragedy in post-production. Long story short, the film was immediately reshot, re-edited to be much more like kid-friendly, and they completely overhauled all future projects to kind of go in a different direction from his films. And obviously, when people saw the theatrical version of Justice League in November of 2017, they weren't super happy about it, and hence the hashtag Release a Standard Cut fan campaign began almost immediately and became this huge thing that eventually led to the release of the movie. But how active were you in the campaign itself? Like, were you a part of any of the fundraisers, buying the shirts? What were some of the things that you did in terms of contributing or participating in for not even just trying to raise awareness to get the movie released itself, which obviously we're all huge fans. We wanted to see it, but also the aspect of raising money for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, AFSP.
I was extremely active during the whole campaign. I took part in pretty much every single event, every fundraiser, every t-shirt campaign that was put out. I was a part of whenever I could, you know, I was in all of it, really. And in the end, I think the thing that probably I was, because every single one of those events I was a part of in terms of, you know, tweeting at a certain time or being a part of the t-shirt campaigns and stuff like that. And a lot of that was done by Mick Doyle with the t-shirts and all that, which was really cool because it was a way to get Zach involved with the designs and all that. It was great. As I said, I went to Pasadena for the AFSP walk as well, was a part of that. And close to the announcement, probably the biggest thing that I was a part of, as was the rest of TPZ, was kind of the curating of the posters. You remember the poster contest?
Yes.
Yeah. So, which was very much deservedly so, won by the great Victor Koo. And I do remember that I was the guy that was handing. I spoke to Victor to get his address that I needed to send to Zach, so Zach could get in touch with him. So that's a cool memory. And huge shout out to Victor. He's great. By the way, the poster is right in front of the staircase that leads down to the stone quarry. And when Zach and I were going down that staircase when we were at his place, I said, "Oh, that's Victor's poster." And he said, "Yeah, Victor's great." So yeah, I was a part of all of it. I remember that the day that everyone was on Twitter pretty much the whole day, I was at a friend's place out of town, and I was being kind of antisocial, actually, because I was just going into the next room, just tweeting and tweeting and tweeting and tweeting and kind of monitoring the whole thing. And because at that point, yeah, it was all hands on deck. And yeah, that was cool. And I mean, whatever I could do in terms of, you know, with the music that I was making that had to do with the whole Snyder Cut campaign, there was that too. And there's actually a really cool short video that was made by myself, Abdul, also from TPZ, Darren, and this Aussie kid named Soham, who did the video. And what I did is I put the voice to the video. Darren wrote the script. Abdul was kind of in the production of the idea of the video. And in the end, I just mixed my voice with the music, which which is recognizable for some fans because it's the music from The Thin Red Line that was actually the score of the first teaser of Man of Steel at Comic-Con. So it's a pretty full circle thing. Wow. That was really cool. It was part of that whole Us United thing, which was nice. Yeah. So I mean, pretty much all of it I've been a part of, and very proud to have been a part of.
Absolutely. And thank you for, you know, everything you've done for raising money for suicide prevention, raising awareness about Zach's version of the movie, and just it's really cool also to see the, you know, like the bonds and the friends that we've made in the process, you know, and people from all over Absolutely. The world, you know, like
sure.
you're in Brazil, I am up in the U.S. and northern U.S. and Minnesota, a few hours from the Canadian border. You know, it's from all over, from LA, you name it. It's so cool that, you know, the entire world has become a Justice League.
Yes.
No pun intended, but.
No, yeah. But that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And no need to thank me because you're part of it. I mean, thank you as well because you wrote a book, man, and the man himself loves your book. So that speaks volumes.
It's a little surreal yet, I have to admit, but you know, but to quote Christopher Reeve's Superman, hey, we're all part of the same team.
Yep, that came to mind as well.
Yeah,
we're all part of the same team. Good night.
Yeah, great ending to a good movie.
Yes, wonderful.
Yeah, that Man of Steel watch party, where Henry Cavill's on there with Zach and Deborah, and at the very end, we get the big announcement of Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Right.
What was that experience like?
Well, actually that one was different for me because I was aware beforehand that it was going to happen.
Really?
But yeah. But the thing is, I unfortunately wasn't too active because number one, my son was born But on his third day, my son had an episode where he almost died. And we had to rush him back to the hospital. So he was in the ICU for 3 days. And one of those days was the Man of Steel watch party. So, yeah, I didn't get to watch that one live. I had to see it later.
Well, that, for a justifiable reason, well, obviously.
Yeah, the most. But thankfully, I mean, everything was fine. It was just a scare. Yeah, it was tough times, you know, middle of the whole lockdown craziness and all that, and having to rush back to the hospital with a 3-day-year-old baby. And yeah, but luckily it was just a scare and nothing apart from that. But I did know that it was going to happen beforehand because I was speaking to the boys in TPZ, and I'm not sure who it was. It was probably Mick. I'm not too sure. But I think he, I'm not sure if it was him. I think it was. Who said, yeah, he's going to announce it at the end of the watch party. And apparently Henry is coming on. And I remember that when I read that, I was like, that's not possible. I just couldn't believe it. I just thought it was kind of unimaginable. And lo and behold, They did it.
Yeah. Well, and thank goodness your son was okay.
Yeah, of course.
And I hope your experience watching the movie itself when it first came out was a better experience.
Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, when the movie came out, and I was privileged enough to get an anticipated screener of it, along with some other people. It was very surreal, and I do remember. And at this point, my son was I think he wasn't. Was he one already? What month did it come out again? Was it in March?
March, yeah.
Yeah, March. It was March. That's right. Yeah. So he still wasn't. He still hadn't completed 1 year of age. So I do remember that. We had just put him to sleep, and I told my wife, I said, look, I'm going to have a long night tonight, if you please. And she's like, yeah, I know you've been anticipating this thing. Go for it. I'll watch a bit with you, and then I'm going to head to bed. And I said, fine. And she was with me. She wasn't like fully paying attention to the movie as I was. But at one point, I just began to weep and just paused the movie and looked at her, and she was like, what's wrong with you? And to me, it was like, this is it. I mean, this is what we've all been waiting for, and it's here, and it's glorious, and it's great. So yeah, very, very, very happy when that finally came out. And,
amen.
Yeah. And the thing that was probably tough to deal with was that, after it ended, it's like, when's the next one coming out?
Yeah. Well, I mean, how many times have you seen the movie since it first came out?
Oh, heaps. Heaps.
Yeah.
Like, I've lost count.
You still watch like multiple times a year?
At least a few times a year, probably.
Okay.
And I really enjoy the Justice is Gray edition. Love watching that.
Yes.
Love it. You were talking about Citizen Kane. There's that kind of feel to it. This kind of like this mixture of, I don't know, it kind of harkens back to Orson Welles and Kurosawa at sometimes. I mean, you're watching like Bruce Wayne heading into the village in Iceland. And it's like, wow, this really feels like this old classic movie, just the way that everything pans out. It's brilliant. So good. So, so good.
Yeah. Well, you know, like you had mentioned, you get to the end of the movie and you're like, I want to see more. What is your take on the topic of the hashtag Restore the Snyderverse movement that began after Zack Snyder's Justice League was released.
My take. Well, I will say this. I'm definitely not a part of that movement in the way that I was a part of the release the Snyder Cut movement. Basically because, you know, for pretty much every known reason, what we set out to do was done, right? In terms of getting the movie released, raising awareness for suicide prevention, and ultimately what I believe was kind of like righting this huge wrong in terms of what happened to Zach, what happened to the movie, all of that. Which to me was kind of the common denominator for me was like, they did him dirty and I want to be able to be a part of undoing that for him in the best of my capacity. Would I love to see the Snyderverse restored? Absolutely. Absolutely. I would absolutely be on board. But at the same time, I invested a lot of time and energy into the whole release, the Snyder Cut thing. And honestly, the only thing that would really make me rally behind that sort of thing would be if Zach was actively coming to me and saying, look, can you help me with this? Sure, absolutely. I don't know where it's at. I don't know if there is an actual future for it. Stranger things have happened. We don't know. With this whole shakeup with Warner Brothers being bought, first it was Netflix and then Netflix isn't in anymore. Now it's Paramount. Who knows? Who knows? I mean, if it ever happens, it would be great. I would be thrilled out of my mind to see that wonderful epic story be brought back to life. We'll see what the future holds. I mean, I think mainly the reason why I'm not a huge supporter of the whole Restore the Snyderverse thing is because of what I said. What we set out to do, we did. And let's be grateful for what we got, because it's completely unprecedented. Absolutely unprecedented. That sort of thing has never been done before. Which was one of the reasons why so many people believed that it couldn't and wouldn't be done. Yet, it happened. It's funny because, of course, one begins to think, like you said, it's been 10 years since BVS. The cast isn't getting any younger. So how long do we wait for something like that? Having said that, I will say that one of my biggest dreams, I've said this to Zach, but he, you know, he delved into another similar subject. But I told him to his face, I said, my biggest dream would be for you to take a dig at Kingdom Come with your cast. And he just looked and he said, how about if I do The Dark Knight Returns?
Of course.
So he just kind of flipped it. And I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, I'd love that. Yeah. So that's something that I would love to see. I mean, an older Henry Cavill, an older Affleck, everyone there, it could work. I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely. Totally agree. The way I view it is like you said, it's been quite a while since they have filmed these movies. They're not getting any younger. I think part of what made it somewhat possible before was that the movie was pretty much mostly already shot and a lot of it was already edited.
Exactly.
You know, right. It was just a matter of touch-ups and releasing it. you know, the distribution of it, right? Which was a doable thing. It doesn't, like you said, it didn't seem like it at the time for a lot of people because it was just an unprecedented kind of release. Thank heavens we have it. Yes. But I think before the movie was shot, right, it's a totally different thing when you don't have a script for a movie yet, let alone the sets and shooting it and editing it and, you know, finding a home for it, whether that's HBO Max or whether that's in movie theaters, IMAX, whatever, right? So it's a totally different ballgame. So it's much more difficult to make that happen. So I had to kind of make peace with the fact that, yeah, the Snyder Cut, Zack Snyder's Justice League, was probably the last we would see, at least in live action. How do you feel about the potential for like a graphic novel or, you know, some people refer to it as the A word, animation?
The A word. I'm open to any of it. Any of it. I mean, if it comes out as a graphic novel, I'll be there day one to buy it. If it comes out in animated form, bring it on. I'd love it. Anything that comes out of that specific story, that specific interpretation of this universe of DC characters and DC lore and DC myths, you know, the whole Gods Among Us thing, which was done so well and with such love for the material, I'm game for any of it. So I do know that there are a bunch of people who would say, no, if it's not a movie, I don't want it. Look, I'm in no position to choose, first of all.
Yeah.
And right. And foremost, I'm a huge supporter of Zack's work. I love the stuff that he does. I really enjoyed Rebel Moon. I really enjoyed Twilight of the Gods. Love Army of the Dead. Not just because I'm a fan of him as an artist, but I'm a fan of the guy. I consider him a friend, and I've told this to him on many occasions that if there's anything that I can do for him, I'll do it. I mean, that to help, whatever it may be. And so, yeah, fundamentally to me, that's what it's about.
Yeah, you know, I've always kind of maintained the same idea too, and like the same position of, I want what Zack wants. If he wants to do it live action, then I support that. If he wants to do it animation or graphic novel, I support that. If he wants to do his own IP, I support that. So at the end of the day, like, that's where I'm at. I would love more, obviously, but you know, I want what Zack wants, and whatever he wants to do, I'm game.
Yeah, same. Absolute same over here, man.
So, just to kind of put a button on that topic, Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Zack Snyder's Justice League, what would you say is your favorite moment or favorite aspect of each movie?
Now that is a tough one to answer. Wow.
Sorry, that was a loaded question.
Yeah. No kidding.
Where do you start, right?
Yeah, where to start? That's a tough one. That's a very tough one. I may not be able to give one specific moment, but the thing that I really appreciate is that in each one of those movies, you have kind of an underlying theme. Man of Steel essentially is a movie about fatherhood, if you really think about it. I mean, the whole idea of Kal-El having been born on Krypton, having one father, and then having another father, and dealing with those two relationships, but it is essentially a story about the relationship between a father and a son. And that's really, really, really powerful for me. I'm very, very, very close to my dad, and I've always seen a similarity between myself and my father and Kal-El and Jor-El. Not saying that I think I'm Superman. That's not it. But the admiration for one's father and the respect for one's father. And that's very deeply ingrained in that story. And I do remember that before Man of Steel came out, I did have one concern that thankfully was of no consequence at all. Because one thing that I did love very much about the Christopher Reeve, well, not the movies, but specifically the first and the second movie, Richard Donner's interpretation, was the impact of the relationship between Kal-El and Jor-El. And I was concerned that that wouldn't be as present in Man of Steel. Well, at the end of the day, it's way more present. Not only with Kal-El and Jor-El, but Kal-El and Jonathan Kent. And so in Man of Steel, you have that fatherhood aspect. In BVS, you have the motherhood aspect, right? And Justice League, you have the family aspect. So I think those three themes, they're just so beautifully spread out into the stories. And I think that's the strength of these stories, because if that kind of heart didn't exist in each one of these movies, they probably wouldn't have the same impact. I think this genuine human relationships existing at the core of these stories, that's what makes them so powerful.
Yes, powerful, relatable, yet epic at the same time.
Yes, epic at the same time.
So there was obviously... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and one small comment. Like we were talking about how, you know, both you and I couldn't really understand the negative backlash to BVS. I can't understand how people find, or should I say, how people don't find the Martha moment absolutely brilliant. Because it crushed me when I saw that in the movie. And it's just, I think it's genius. And the way that it's presented is, it's very heartfelt, and the way that you see how Superman at his most fragile moment and still showing his greatest strength, which is his spirit, his unbreakable spirit. The first thing that he was thinking about was, I have to save my mom. And without giving that identity away. And that flicker of hope just breaks Batman down and goes down to his greatest fear and greatest trauma and brings him back to being a human being. And people joke about that? That's just shameful.
It's so surface level, and I know I sound so pretentious when like saying that, but...
No, but I agree. Yeah. I agree. It is. I mean, that really doesn't move you? Poof. I feel sorry for whoever feels that that moment is a joke or a, you know, something to point your finger at. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and there's so many good stuff about those movies. All the characters, all the plot elements, and
yes. We'd be here all day.
Yeah. we literally would be here all day. Yeah.
Yeah.
All day. Is there a movie, like an unmade movie, one that was in the works or was, you know, planned to happen that didn't happen that you wish we would have had?
In this universe?
Yeah. Like in the...
Sure.
I don't know how to... I don't even want to say Snyderverse because... the term gets so misrepresented in the media and online with people.
Because they
take Snyderverse as like the other movies, like The Flash and all the other ones that after
and
the
link
fact
it to But I understand what you're saying. The how should we say it? The pure Snyderverse, if you will.
Pure, yeah.
Absolutely. The Batman movie. The Batman movie with Ben and Manganiello as Deathstroke. That one, to me, I was just... Especially after seeing an interview with Joe talking about the idea of the kind of menace that Deathstroke would be in the movie. And he said that the idea of the character wasn't to be a mere antagonist, but there was this kind of constant fear of the presence of this character as you would feel in Jaws. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. And at that point, I thought, because this was after Zack Snyder's Justice League, I thought it was a possibility because, I mean, the release was a huge success. And so many people who weren't even a part of the whole Snyder Cut thing were like, oh, this is cool. When is the next one coming out? Because, I mean, you really come out of the movie going, oh, great. I want to see the next one. I want to see Darkseid arrive. And I think Joe said something like that in the script, the idea was that Slade Wilson would kind of like destroy Bruce Wayne's friend and family circle around him to kind of weaken him. And I thought that's an action thriller that I would love to see. And so much so that it made me write a Deathstroke imaginary score just to get it out of my system, because I just really fell in love with the idea. And I thought, look, if it gets made, if it doesn't get made, if I were to get the privilege to score this is what the music would sound like. And
you talk about a script that I would give almost anything or would give so much just to be able to read it, you know, like what was going to happen in the story and hearing what it was about. That was a missed opportunity. 100%.
Huge missed opportunity.
And honestly, it was probably one of my favorite chapters that I wrote in my book was the chapter about Ben Affleck's solo Batman movie. Kind of what it was going to be about, why it didn't happen. It was a tough chapter to write just because of, obviously Ben was going through a very difficult time in his life, and that played a role in it. There were obviously other factors as well in terms of like, obviously they were at that point in time, they were kind of moving away from the darker tone. Jeff Johns was involved with the project as well. And who knows, right? Like stuff that I'm not privy to, but that was a tough chapter. The Ray Fisher chapter was accountability over entertainment. I wrote a chapter in the book about that. That was a really tough chapter as well, just because like you're walking a fine line too of like of the other side and not wanting to get sued or whatever. But and it's tough because like it's like we have opinions because we are fans, right? Like that's why we do what we do.
Absolutely.
But that's why you make music. And very good soundtracks, by the way.
Thank you.
The Deathstroke one is a standout as well.
Thank you.
As is the John Stewart Green Lantern. So
right. Thank you. Yeah. I like that one as well. Yeah. I think those were the last two that I did. Yeah. Yeah, those were a lot of fun to make.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? Will the Snyderverse be restored? You know, I guess we'll find out, right?
Yeah.
In time. Who knows? We'll see.
In time, we'll see.
You had mentioned that you were on, let me rephrase that. You mentioned that you got to see the trailer ahead of time for Rebel Moon.
I did. Yeah.
Which is really cool. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, big fan?
Yes. Big fan. Big fan. The only thing I will say is that I feel bad that the full versions weren't released beforehand. That's the only thing that I kind of feel sorry for, because, yeah, I mean, to me, there's no real comparison. Those are the movies.
I couldn't agree more, honestly, you know. But it is what it is.
It is what it is, yeah.
What are your thoughts about his other Netflix stuff? Like you mentioned Twilight of the Gods. There was Army of the Dead.
Love Army of the Dead. Yeah, Army of Thieves is really cool as well. But specifically being directed by Zach, yeah, Army of the Dead is great. I really wanted to see where that movie was going, especially with the whole thing about the time loop and the zombies that weren't exactly zombies and that were, you know, all of that was really the thing with the Xanadites. I mean, it's all pretty fascinating. I was like, wow, where is this going? So, yeah, I was hyped to see more of that. And Twilight of the Gods, I really, really enjoyed. I'm a huge Norse mythology buff. Love that stuff. And I love the style of it. And yeah, as soon as the news came out that Zach was doing stuff with Norse mythology, I said, wow, this is, I mean, my favorite director and the kind of material that I really love. And so, yeah, it's a really good one.
Yes, I agree. I enjoyed it as well. And I'm not someone who's like a huge horror guy. So like, or like slash movies, you know?
Right,
so,
sure.
Like Army of the Dead, like, isn't a movie I would ordinarily be like, I can't wait to see it. But because Zach's doing it, I'm like, I can't wait to see it. And then I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie.
This is the cool thing about Zach being ahead of his time. I mean, talking about zombie movies, Dawn of the Dead, if I'm wrong, someone please fact check me on that. But if memory serves, it was the first movie where you had these rabid running zombies for the first time. I don't think that had been done before. I mean, obviously not in the first version of Dawn of the Dead, the Romero version, but it was just a fresh take of the genre. And then you see that Zach manages to do that in so much other stuff. And at the end of the day, I think, you know, if he suffers from some sort of curse, it's being ahead of his time and putting something out, and you know, many people don't appreciate it, and then 10 years later they'll go, oh wow, guy's a genius.
Exactly.
Yeah
You know, one of my favorite authors was that way too, F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Sure.
Most famous for The Great Gatsby.
Yes, of course.
I mean, when he passed away, which he passed away much too soon, but when he did pass away, like, he wasn't famous, he wasn't well liked, or, you know, he wasn't a huge success at that time, maybe initially in his career during the roaring 20s, but yeah. And then after he passed away, all of a sudden, like, people started going back and revisiting and being like, oh yeah, this is really good. And then now it's an iconic classic, you know.
Unfortunately, it's a story that repeats itself in terms of great artists and great works of art that unfortunately get, you know, the appreciation they deserve posthumously. It happens a lot, unfortunately.
Well, it's a good thing we're here so that we can make sure that Zach knows that his movies are loved, right?
Yes, yes. Well, he knows it, but I think it's never too much to tell him.
Absolutely. One of his movies are you looking forward to the most that he has coming up? The Last Photograph, Brawler?
Well, both of them.
Both, yeah.
Especially, easy answer. Yeah, both. Yeah, both of them. And I'm not sure where it's at now, but I do know that he was involved with another with a Netflix movie, which was a cop movie, he talked about it somewhere, but anyway, I was interested all the same. But the thing with The Last Photograph and Brawler is that two completely different movies. And I'm curious to see The Last Photograph, especially because it's a smaller movie in, you know, in every aspect. And we've never really seen Zach do something like that. So I'm curious to see what it's going to look like and feel like.
Yeah, I am really excited. I can't wait for that one. I hope someday he gets to make The Fountainhead.
Oh, man. Wouldn't that be a dream?
Yes.
I mean, that would be amazing. That would be... Hopefully someday he manages.
Well,
he gets to it.
Isn't his house inspired by The Fountainhead?
I believe it is. I believe it is. I can't say for certain, but I believe it is.
Yeah, and maybe I'm wrong about that, but that was just something that I always thought was like, oh, that, like, I could see the connection there. Like,
sure,
I remember when I saw the picture of it, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be sure to ask him sometime.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the case.
There you go.
Yeah.
Howard Rourke 2.0.
Oh, that's him.
Yeah. Well, how about you, Geraldo? Do you have any fun projects in the works that you'd like to tease?
Not really. I'm basically still working away at what I've been doing in terms of my voice work, my music. I mean, I haven't written much original music right now. Just been way too busy with, you know, scoring ads and content and doing voice work here and there. But if something interesting pops up, you'll be the first to know.
I can't wait. That'd be awesome.
Thanks.
Very cool. Well, Geraldo, this was so much fun. I would love to have you back someday.
It'd be a pleasure. It'd be a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. It was a great, great conversation. And time flew.
It really did, didn't it?
Yeah.
Like you said, we could talk about this stuff all day.
All day, easily. But, my wife would kill me.
yeah, me too, yeah. But you're an amazing guy. You've done a lot of amazing, really cool stuff that I highly endorse everyone check out. So
thank you so much, man. And likewise, you're a great guy. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And it's been a pleasure speaking to you almost in person, but at least, you know, seeing you and hearing you, it's been a blast. Thank you so much for having me.